Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who have chiseled good looks in their joinery: Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
What's happening, everybody? It's show number 514. On today's show, we're talking about wooden molding planes, how to improve a raw linseed oil finish, and trapezoid case mitered angles. But before we get to that, I want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler is giving away a new product each month to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Now this month, they're giving away, get this guys, a Dust-Rite wall mount dust collector.
This is big. This is a big, like, prize-wise.
That's a big deal. That's big doings.
Big doings.
What was you? I got me one of them.
With a unique wall mount design, the dust collector gobbles up dust at the source without hogging up the floor space. This is a prize valued at $399.99.
It's a big one.
That's a big prize right there. I might have to promote this on the Wood Whisper social stuff. Enter for your chance to win before December 1st at rockler.com/woodtalk. It sounds like Christmas is coming early for somebody.
Yeah.
Dang.
Like big time. And if
I gotta tell you though, add the canister filter that and it's a beast.
Yeah.
It's like, I love it. It was the best thing I ever did for that thing. Sorry, Matt.
Cool.
Whatever, man. Just starting off early. Let's get into it. So let's talk about Patreon. If you want to help support the show, I mean, you can do so. You can go to patreon.com/woodtalk and sign up to become a patron of the show. This episode we're thanking Adam Sporer.
Technically
a lot of R's in there.
There is. Well, thanks for that, Adam. We really appreciate it. And, if you guys want to help support the show, that's one way you could do it. Just go to patreon.com/woodtalk. We certainly appreciate your support there. All right, fellas.
All right.
What's on the bench? See what's going on.
How many benches you got?
Still, two.
What's on the bench?
One too many?
I got one too many, and I need to get it out of there. So the auction happened, and everything, you know, went off without a hitch. But the first guy that won, the top bidder, we sent him an email, didn't hear from him for a day or so, and finally got back to us and said that, well, he's in Texas, first of all. And then he says he had a family emergency, so has to back out. So what we're left with doing at that point is going to who was the next person. And you kind of have to like think about how an auction works. In the last few minutes, they bid each other up.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person bid someone else up, you kind of have to erase all of their bids because it would be unfair otherwise. And we have to go back down to the second person, I guess like the runner up, their highest bid before that person bid everything up. So thankfully
this,
the number
didn't. This sounds like a mess.
It's complicated. Yeah. It's a whole thing.
It's too much for me. Trying to be
as fair as possible here. And the second guy
should have lit it on fire.
That's what I should have done.
Always listen to us.
Yeah, the second guy is in Vegas, and he's going to be out here in a couple of weeks. He'll be making the trek down here to pick it up. So thankfully,
is he a street magician?
Yeah, is he a street magician?
Yeah, because aren't all people in Vegas street magicians?
Or strippers, one or the other.
Well, either one, they could be a prop. It's not actually going to be a workbench.
It's for sawing people in half down the split. That's why that split's there.
Or doing splits.
There you go. Dual purpose. Vegas, here I come, says my workbench. So anyway, that's coming to an end. And I don't know if we mentioned this before, but all the proceeds are going to Rob Kosman's Purple Heart Project. So I will be more than happy to write that check and support that cause. I think it's pretty great. I'm also getting ready to do another one of my, you know, classic Wood Whisperer shootouts where no one really wins.
Classic.
Shootouts where nobody wins. And one of the miter gauges that I have in this thing is Rockler's new one. So I haven't had a chance to get my hands on that. You know, there's a little bit of conflict of interest there, obviously.
Yeah, a little bit.
But how do you review all these great miter gauges without taking a look at Rockler's? It seems like a great competitor at a good price. So that's going to be in there. I'm looking forward to cracking that open and checking it out.
What sort of things are you comparing, testing? Do you have any, you want to give us any insight into what the
parameters
or process or what we can look forward to in this shootout, this multi-duel?
Sure. Yeah. I'll get real specific here. It's going to be like, do I like it? Do I not like it?
Okay, so it is like classic, like Wood Whisperer style.
Laced with opinion and bias and all that goes with it. Well,
super subjective. Yeah,
there are things, my favorite. There are things that bug me about some of these, like the way that you adjust a bar in a miter slot and how that maybe behaves a couple years later. Incra. That split washer design is a joke. Sorry. I do not like it at all. So I'll be looking at how the miter bars work and, you know, trying to get a feel for how well they might work over time, which ones are more likely to cause you problems. You know, the fence itself is always good. How easy is it to put on a sacrificial fence and swap them out? Can you make a bunch of them ahead of time? How much use can you get out of them? How do they secure your micro adjustments? And if you have a stop, does that stop work with the fence and then work with a sacrificial fence in addition to? Can you still use that stop? And of course, you know, the basics of like, how well does it adjust to 90? How easy? And then how well does it keep its 90 degree setting when you change the other angles? How accurate are those other angles? So, you know, it's really the basics, honestly. But this is brought about by frustrations that I had with the Incra model that I'm using. So we'll see how it goes. But ultimately, when you're looking at some of these, you know, there's like the sub, I would call it like the sub $150 level. And then there's the $300 plus level.
Yeah.
There's quite a disparity between them, and that I might even have to break them into two categories, because it's kind of unfair to compare like a $120 miter gauge that's just getting the job done to a, you know, $350 Harvey or something like that. So yeah, it'll be interesting.
Well, I'm excited to hear what you say, and this is what I'm going to do. Whatever you pick, I'm going to buy.
Really?
Because I've never had one of these. So okay. We'll just go with that.
All right. Well, maybe I'll just say I don't want, and you can pick out.
I will not make that purchase.
Yeah, I've only used the stock one that comes with the saws.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you get away with that? What's wrong with you?
Apparently a lot. I'm sure it's one of those things you're like, I didn't know I needed this.
Well, people are going like, you should definitely take one of the stock miter gauges that comes with the saw just to kind of have a baseline, you know, and put that in the comparison. I'm like, what? What? Isn't it obvious why you don't want that piece of crap?
That's what I do. I don't know.
No, I get it. Some of them actually do come with a decent one, you know, with detents and things like that.
I don't. We'll see. Let me just modify my answer. I use the stock miter gauge with the miter set, little pin things.
Yeah. See, you can.
It's like a little combo thing. So I don't really use the miter gauge as like to set angles. I set the angles.
You just lock them in.
Irrelevant of the actual detents or the slide or the angle thing on the
gauge.
That's
a viable way to go, though. I mean, if you take a cheap miter gauge and you get, if miter set's still in business, right?
Yeah, this deal. Yeah.
Okay. So like you get yourself a miter set to go with it. That's a viable way to get the job done that doesn't involve a $350 miter gauge.
No, I think what's this miter set? Like $80, $90?
Something like that.
You know, that's a good point. I think I completely underused my miter gauge because I went with an upgrade. I bought a Craig and I don't think I used like half of what it could do. Yeah. I was like, Matt, I didn't trust anything. So I was like, any angle I set on it, I set right. with something else as the yeah. reference, you know, and it had all the detents and precisely machine stuff. It had the flip stop on it. And like, I never used that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and it's the funny thing is, even though I have an Incra, which is known, at least thought to be one of the best, even when I'm locked in at 90, do you think I just go to 45 and wing it and say, there's my picture frame?
That's what I was going to say. Like, I don't do that. Like, I make my test cuts. I verify the cuts, make sure they're actually what right. they need to be. And then I go for it.
Yeah.
So it's not like, I'm like, oh, I believe you. 90 I'm checking or 45 it anyway. Or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I want to get a feel for. Like, are some of these so good that I can do it 10 times, go back and forth. And every time it's perfect that I would eventually build up that trust that like, yeah, I know if I set this at 90, every other angle is perfect.
Well, it'll be interesting too, to see, like, I don't know how you can test this, but like how much it loses calibration over time as you're like taking it on off the saw and like
that's a that's
kicking
a
it around
one.
The floor like
that's
like
a tricky one because that's like that's a real life situation like putting yes. it on like putting it on dropping it down putting it on a rack on the wall like that's something that happens over the course of months to you know a year so yeah simulating that might be a little bit tricky
I think you just
fair.
Pick it up and you just shake the bejesus out of it and then put it yeah. back down and see how it works.
That's gonna make for good video.
Well, you know, you bring it to the paint store and have them put it in the paint mixer.
There you go.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, this fits in there, right? Okay, just shake it for a few minutes, please. That's a good idea. I like that.
Can you shake this for me? Sir, don't worry about it. Just do it.
Just do it. Just do I'll it. Buy a can of paint. Just make it happen. Compensate you. Yeah, so that's super exciting. The other thing is I'm going to have to wait a little while because I don't want to be calibrating all the... Well, I'm going to have to wait a while anyway because a lot of these are on back order. Surprise, surprise. Something's on back
order.
It right
doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, so I'm not even sure I'm going to have them all in time before I like take a Christmas break. So we'll see. This could be an early 2022 thing. So
how many are you doing? This ballpark?
I've already got like six of them.
Okay, oh, that's... God. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So I mean, it may be six, seven, eight of these little guys.
What little guys? You got any big guys?
Some of them are a little bigger than others. Well, the cool thing is, again, I'm going to like, you know, cherry pick the one I like the most. I'm going to keep it. And then the rest of them will be either giveaways or sold to kind of recoup my investment. But in the end, especially when you go over the $300 level, how bad are they going to get?
I don't know. We're going to find out, right?
Yeah. Yes. Well, let me ask you guys this. You're talking about not trusting these things. What is your opinion on Woodpecker's 90 degree miter gauge, which you can't call it a miter gauge though.
I don't even know what that is.
Not cutting miters. You haven't seen this thing?
I don't
think so.
I don't know. No,
pay attention to Woodpecker.
You're busy building a house is what you're
doing. I don't like red.
You're busy doing. You don't like red? Well, then you're
I mean, I like red, but I have no Woodpecker's things at
okay.
all.
So this Woodpecker's thing is like, woodworkers mostly only use the 90 degree setting. So why do we have all these other settings that just screw things up? Introducing the new 90 degree miter gauge thing.
That doesn't new like now?
Yeah. Like just introduced and
exact 90 miter gauge.
Exact 90. So it comes from the factory guaranteed to be 90 degrees. And then you just have to make sure that jives with your miter gauge and blade, but it is locked in 90 degrees. That's all it does.
I mean, I guess it's like a crosscut sled.
It's like a crosscut sled, but not as good.
Yeah.
That's like my shooting board. I often say that like the minute you make the shooting board adjustable is the minute that it goes out of true. So I just lock it in at 90 and that's what I use that for. And I have a miter shooting board and I have,
Well, like the Incra 5000, which does like every angle known to man, I never touch it. Like it's locked in at 90 and I don't want it to move. So at the same time, I want to make fun of the Woodpeckers thing, but I also get it. It's just, you know, it's Woodpeckers. It's made in the USA. It's I don't know if this particular thing is going to be a limited run, but these things are super expensive because of the way that they're manufactured. So, you know, it's going to be a tough thing to justify, but I understand the need for it or I can see why they thought there was a need for it.
Well, you see what happens in the commercial world. This is really appealing. Actually, I'm actually sending this page to my mill boss right now.
Oh, yeah?
This is the type of thing, like, because you have a table saw that you just do 90 degree cuts on. So like in Matt's suggestion about, will they like go out of calibration over time? You never take it off. Like it never comes out of the slot. It's in the same table saw all the time. It's like, Mark, when you had two bandsaws, you had
a
resaw bandsaw and a curb cutting bandsaw. So you just need a separate table saw. That's all you need.
Well,
no big deal.
I got one on the way, so I
see. There you go.
Two workbenches, two table saws. I'm doubling up.
Two shops.
I can actually see, like, my mill manager is going to be all over this. He's going to want this because it doesn't move, because he doesn't have to roll out. He doesn't have to. He always expects that the employees will mess things up. Yeah. So yeah, he's like, smart. You know, he's the guy that goes and sets stuff and does the machine maintenance. And he's like, I know that somebody's going to screw with this and screw it up. Well, you can't screw with this. So he's going to love it.
Well, I was super curious, so I ordered one. It's on order, and that's one of them that might take a little while to come in. But it's like one of the most expensive ones in the set, and it only does 90. So it's a question of like, well, how does that pan out? Is there any use case where you could really justify that? Shannon's example is the perfect reason why you might.
I'm definitely going to thumbs down that video because they won't do 45s.
Give
me that 45s. Within the first 20 seconds of the video, I'm going to thumbs down.
It will do a 45. You just got to cut new slots. If you cut your T slots at 45, it should be good, right?
There you go.
That's brilliant.
Actually, yeah. I mean, that's a permanent way to like really make. Why don't they come with more slots in a table saw? Come on. Table saw manufacturers, there's an opportunity for you.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Imagine increase the square footage of your table saw top by tenfold.
It's huge. Have
space for that angle.
I love it. Everybody wants like a giant cast iron top table saw. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Nothing wrong with that. All right. Well, that's enough about crap that's going on in my shop. Matt, you're not doing anything.
That was pretty good, though.
You?
I don't know. I enjoyed this discussion.
Well, good.
Let's call that a show. Wrap it up. Let's go.
All right.
Hit that mid roll and then we'll wrap it
up. The mid roll and the post roll, and we're out.
The post roll. Just one long Rockler extravaganza.
Yep.
Oh, man.
And ironically, Mark did not choose the Rockler miter gauge. It failed. It didn't work.
Failed the Spagnuolo test.
Not yet. We'll see.
So I think last time we recorded, I hadn't started the home edition thing. I think it was like, I'm going to start this next week and it should be like
just
something.
Gearing up.
Yeah.
That's right, because I think I asked you how you were going to do it, and you said it was you and in this Donovan character, and I said that should go well.
He's a character.
Yeah.
It looks like
he knows what he's doing.
It's scary how how much of he knows what he's doing. He knows. It's terrifying. So one of the more interesting things for me through this process is kind of seeing how his mind works and the mindset of like, what has to happen when and what the interdependencies are. Mm-hmm. Because if you take like every single task individually, it's not like, I mean, there's some like nuance here and there, but it's not crazy. But there's a lot of things that like, if you do this in a different order, you're going to pay for it later because you're going to be doing twice as much work or whatever. So like right now, today we were getting ready to set our ledger up for the ceiling in the addition. And we're going to be removing the wall beneath it. So he's like, I'm just going to make a quick cut here to remove the sheathing we're going to cover up so that we don't have to like dig around this new thing later when we go to remove his wall. I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So anyway, you know how he does it? A track saw on the wall. he with a couple of screws, he screws the track where it needs to go on the wall and just makes the cut. I'm like, oh, that's, I've never, track saws nice. Normally like a horizontal activity.
Yeah.
Not vertical. But okay. That works.
It's interesting. But, I mean, I imagine it's a lot like, you know, when you're building a basic piece of furniture, you build enough tables, you start to know a workflow that just makes sense and it makes it as efficient as possible. And this, this house or this addition is like a giant complex piece of furniture that this, you know, with enough experience, you just know this is the order. This is what's going to make our life easier.
Yeah.
And sounds like he's got that experience.
These are the pitfalls. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do this.
Yeah, so It's been going well. We're in our fourth week now.
Mm-hmm.
So we excavated and set the footing forms the first week. Second week, we poured the footings and set our wall forms. The third week, we poured the walls and did our cap, which is like the floor above the basement. And then this week we backfilled and we're starting to put walls up. So It's kind of fun, like how quickly it goes, because like in that stage of the project where things change rapidly, that's not going to be the case for the whole time. But, you know, like just like when you're building furniture, it's like, oh, the initial casework, the initial structure work, that goes really quickly. And all of a sudden you have a big box. Then you spend like, I don't know, 8 times as long doing all the detail work, right?
Sanding the box.
Yes, there's that.
Right.
No, it is amazing watching the progress, because it is like, okay, dirt hole in the ground. And then like you blink and next thing you know, well, okay, that's clearly an addition going on to the house.
Well,
and it starts to look more house than dirt.
It's also kind of fun too, as like, because like I live here and this is going to be like my space or like the family space or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like in the beginning, it's like we had the plans and like can kind of visualize like what it's going to be. But when you get those like those walls in place and you feel like, oh my, this is a nice space. Like you get like an idea of like how big it's going to be, what the views are going to be like,
fit in there,
all of that too. Yeah. Like, oh, it's starting to come together. And you start really feeling like this is just, I don't know, just different.
I think you mentioned it before. Can you reiterate on like what this new space is going to be, the basement and the top floor version? What are you doing with the space?
Absolutely. I would be happy to reiterate that. That's the most frequently asked question I've had the last 3 weeks or 4 weeks.
What you building?
So what you doing here? What are you doing here? So the basement level is going to be our new office. So Lindsay and I will have like a nice little, it's pretty big. It's 14 by 18 is the interior finished size of that room.
That's good.
So we'll have our own little space over there to work and whatnot. The level above that is going to be a sunroom and it'll be part of the new kitchen space. So our pantry and our breakfast nook will straddle the current exterior wall, and that'll be part of the kitchen.
Okay.
And then above that will be a flat roof deck, which would be off of our bedroom.
Oh, so there is a third level to this.
Well, I mean, it's a roof that you can walk on.
It's made to be like habitable space.
Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's going to be super sweet.
Man, that's great. Well, cool. This is, I don't know, how many people will actually document this sort of thing? I'm sure there are people who've done it.
I don't know. It's been, like, I was honestly a little worried. I'm like, I don't know if people are going to like this, but this has been so far the most, like, positive and the most interested people have been in anything I've ever done.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, oh, well, great.
That's pretty cool, though.
I got a lot of detail to share.
Yeah. It's a win-win. I mean, you're doing the work anyway, so you may as long as you're getting views from it and stuff, that helps make it worthwhile.
I'm trying to also show it more of a realistic a sense rather than like a polished, sped up crazy thing where like people think these things happen in like 2 weeks or something.
Right. Every time Pancake falls in a hole, you show it. Pulling her out.
She has not fallen in the hole. She's very smart. She's like, I ain't going near that.
There's been a few stories I've seen where I was just like, oh, doggy, come back. Don't do it.
She's not that dumb.
Your life is good. Don't do it.
Don't do it. It's not worth it.
Little Pancake, come back.
I'll tell you what though, like when we got the backfill in, I'm like, this is so much nicer because we're like working on the top of that foundation. Like I'm hanging over the edge of it, trying to nail a ledger on the other side of it or something.
Yeah.
Like if I just lean over a little too far, I'm going head first, like 8 feet down to a hole.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound fun.
A little safer now.
It's a lot safer and there's a lot less like climbing around and ladders and scaffolding and whatnot. So that's fewer steps.
Yeah. Well, good for you.
Yeah.
That sounds exciting.
How fun.
All right. Shannon, what about you?
I'm doing something new in the hand tool school, but ironically it's something new with something old. I have started a small group, kind of a small cohort of students through semester one. And, we're specifically going through it as a group and working kind of on an actual timeline. One of the big selling points of the school has always been, you know, you can work at your own pace, you can work in your own shop. And that works really well, but then there's other people who really need that guided feel. I mean, there's nothing that can replace that in-person class, you know, that someone right over your shoulder, moreover the camaraderie of working with, you know, the 5, 6, 10 other students that are in that class for that particular week. Mm-hmm. But it's hard, right? You know, you got to take a week off work, you've got to travel, you've got to pay for the class itself, all that fun stuff. So this is an opportunity to, I've got a group, of course, because it is technically virtual, it's a little bit more scalable, but you know, I couldn't do 300 people at once, I don't think, but we've got 35 people that are following this set schedule and we're going lesson by lesson, working through it. And it's really kind of fun. You know, I've said one of the things that I kind of have realized about myself and my woodworking is I truly enjoy the teaching aspect of it. I still enjoy building stuff, but I get a lot of satisfaction out of helping other people polish their skills and stuff like that. So it's kind of fun. I mean, it's also interesting because I'm revisiting a lot of lessons that I filmed, you know, in 2010.
No boy.
And well, in some ways,
it's always fun.
I kind of cringe, but in other ways, it's really affirming because like the meat of it still applies. Like the principles are still sound, but like, you know, from a, well, tech perspective, I look at some of the stuff and go, ooh, I should really reshoot that. Or then like I was just reviewing the sawing lesson and it's like everything I talk about is still good, but I've been able to distill it to more core principles. And I just watch myself saw from almost 12 years ago to now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it's amazing what 10 years of constant sawing can do to one skill level.
Sure.
So it's kind of neat to see that. It's very affirming for my own skill level, but also just nice to see that like the hot air I was spouting back in 2010 wasn't just hot air, you know, it actually had some merit to it. I'm enjoying it. This current pace, it's actually going to take us through February. You know, we're taking it slow because obviously the holidays and things tend to gum up, you know, your free time. Some people, they get more free time, but a lot of people don't. But I'm kind of excited about this and may, you know, possibly extend this into other semesters in the future. We'll just see how it goes. But yeah.
Is this like a paid feature or you're just doing it?
Well, the people who are in it are paying monthly. So yes, technically, but like I didn't sell spots for it or anything like that.
Gotcha.
The people who are doing it are already on a subscription plan. It may be something that I visit in the future. Call this like the test case, if you will. Mm-hmm. I'm using my apprentice guinea pigs, in other words, to work it out.
Nice.
You know, if nothing else, it might end up, it could just end up being an additional stream of content because I am creating some new content to kind of walk through it. And there's some live stuff and things like that. If nothing else, it could be repackaged and sold later, I suppose. But yeah.
Nice.
Fun part is what I'm getting out of it, I think, more than anything else. Forget these people. Who cares about the students? I'm really
it's not about
fun.
Them. It's all about me.
It's all about me.
Nice. All right. We wanted to read some fun stuff here. So it was, a couple weeks ago now. So our buddy Chris Schwarz, he has a great sense of humor, I like to think. And he went on like a Twitter rant listing all the things that might qualify you as a wiener woodworker. And I guess if you ever try to follow a ongoing Twitter thread, it's a nightmare. So thankfully he consolidated all this onto his website on the Lost Art Press blog. And it is 20 things. Now, I don't think we need to read them all, but there are some funny ones in here. And, you know, some of them, he might be talking about me, some of these, but it's pretty funny. So I'll read like the first five and you guys can jump in. So he says, you might be a wiener woodworker if... number one, you call yourself a master woodworker without the documentation. Number two, you write and talk about yourself in the third person. Number three, you name simple jigs and processes after yourself. It's fantastic. Awesome. Number four, wear a cape around town. Well, look, it worked in for what's his name in Seinfeld. He wore a cape.
Oh, yeah, anyway. Right.
Number five, you have used the words, I don't even know that word, epistemological. And hegemony when discussing woodworking.
Nice.
Yikes.
Nice.
You guys want to take some more of these? Shannon, you go.
I'm just going to skip ahead because the one that I like is every piece is built one at a time because, well, you've only built one piece so far.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Do you have a favorite, Matt?
You have more t-shirts in your web store than furniture pieces. Like, that's me. That's
good. Where's the one with the logo? You have a logo, but you don't have insurance.
That's 20, number 20. I thought of you for 19.
Yeah, you have more tattoos than router bits. That's not true at all because my whole right arm is just one tattoo.
Oh, is that how it works? We consider that one?
It's based on how it was designed, not how it was applied. It's one tattoo, technically. I only have like six.
I like your business card features two of these terms: bespoke, artisanal, handmade, crafted maker, and wedding DJ.
You own more beard wax than beeswax. I like this one too. Your clients, Mom and Aunt Hazel, come from all over the globe. Paris, Kentucky, and Rome, Georgia.
About number 12 here. The only two things you've ordered from Rockler are hairpin legs and pourable epoxy.
Chris, you bad man. All right. Yeah, well, anyway, you can go to the website to read all of them, and we'll put a link in our show notes to that.
Your formal apprenticeship was a weekend pen turning class. How do you take a whole weekend to take a pen turning class? That's like a 2-hour class.
I don't know. You should really know quite really a bit detailed. About it. Yeah. By the time you're done,
you've made 800 stuff. Pens.
Well, you guys know who the I screwed that up. It's Rockler.
Yes. No. Whatever. It's Rockler.
Whatever.
Do you know who services many wiener woodworkers? That's Rockler.
That's right. Yeah. You know who sells hairpin legs and epoxy? Rockler. Well, Rockler is among your go-to. Things. Yeah. Rockler is your go-to source to build your holiday wish list from, well, I think last week we talked about gifts in terms of making gifts, but what about you receiving gifts?
All the That's gifts.
What we're talking about this week. Give me
Order
all the
whole
gifts.
Catalog, please.
Yeah. Take it all.
Send the whole thing.
From router tables to power tools to clamps or custom branding irons, Rockler has a wide selection with hundreds of new products to choose from. And if you're not sure exactly what you want, you can never go wrong with a Rockler gift card. Find the Rockler gift giving guide plus great holiday deals on the Rockler.com homepage. So get over there, check it out. That's the little wish list you set up, and you somehow give a link to someone and be like, you know, what's the equivalent these days of like, you used to leave a magazine open to a particular ad, right? Old school. So how would you do that these days? Like, how do you accidentally give your wife or husband or whoever, how do you give them your wish list?
See, I think all you have to do is click on the website a bunch, and then the ad starts showing up in every page you visit because of the cookies.
That's true. That's how the world works now anyway. Yeah.
Browse anything on Amazon, and every page you visit on Amazon now says that's what you were looking at.
Oh, good point. That's the way to do it. Take advantage of the system. Good job. All right.
Get them cookies.
Either way, Rockler is the place to go to get that wish list going and let the people in your life know what you want for the holidays. Okay, let's get to our questions. Probably want to rip through these here. So I got one here from James Coker. It's in relation to raw linseed oil. He says, about 6 months ago, I decided to finish a walnut coffee table with raw linseed oil. It makes a beautiful finish, but I discovered that the raw linseed oil does not do much in the way of actually sealing the surface of the wood. I'm finding the oil to be deeply penetrating, but the surface of my top is really starting to have that unattractive scuff marks that are associated with an unfinished piece. I have researched and read a good deal about using other finishes with boiled linseed oil, but there's not much information about there regarding raw linseed oil. What can a guy use to seal the wood over raw linseed oil? Thanks for your time. All right, so here's the thing.
Raw.
In the raw linseed oil, really, the boiled linseed oil just has chemical additives to it to help it cure and dry a little bit faster. Boiled linseed oil or regular linseed oil, raw linseed oil, will also dry eventually. It's just it's going to take a lot longer. It's a slower process. So if you have a table that's been around or what was it, a table? Yeah, coffee table that's been around for a while. Chances are the oil that's on that wood is cured enough that you can kind of move on to whatever you want at this point. My recommendation, though, would be to stay within the oil-based family. And I think you could probably just scuff sand this thing, clean it up, maybe give it a mineral spirits wipe down or naphtha wipe down, and then hit it with Armor Seal. You know, some kind of wiping varnish, water locks, something like that, that would be totally compatible with what you have there. And you could start building layers of film that offer you the protection and the sheen that you might be looking for. But I don't think you have any issues here with this stuff. If it's been on there for a long time, it's probably cured. And I think you're fine to proceed with moving on to your next finish, whatever that may be. Quick answer for you on this one.
Very nice. I like it. So this is a question from Richard, and it basically says he's been woodworking for a while, mostly power tool guy, but kind of embracing what hybrid woodworking means. So
attaboy.
He
it means nothing.
That means you owe me $3.
Yeah. Cha-ching. There it goes. Every time we need that sound effect. Every time hybrid woodworking is said, cha-ching.
Okay. I'll do that.
So basically, I think he's embracing the whole idea where he does the rough stuff with power tools. And when it gets to the fine work or the finishing type stuff, he moves more to hand tools. So he says, I've been wanting to get a few wooden molding planes and let my router table gather some more dust. I'd read in a couple places that you don't need much to do quite a bit, a pair of 4 and 6 hulls and rounds and maybe a couple other items. But I'm finding a lot harder to get into this than I imagine it would be. Long story short, all the flea markets and antique stores is coming up dry. When I look at the newly made stuff, the prices are painfully high. A set of 4 and 6 hollows and rounds look like they would set me back around $800. I know woodworking is not cheap, but do you know any strategies I could use to get started without investing $1,000 before I know if I even want to get serious about adding this to my work? And that's the key point right there. I love working with hollows and rounds. So much fun. But I know a lot of people who have been like, this is dumb. it was fun one time, but no. So first things first, I wouldn't get a pair of 4s and 6s. I would just get a pair of 6s. Especially if you're coming from the power tool world and the router table world. If you think of those router bit sets that you could find on eBay, they were cheapo router bits, but you get 45 bits for $19 or something like that on eBay. What used to be the Vandalus special before router bit of the month and Whiteside set him straight. Every single one of those profiles in that bit set is really based around the idea that your board is 3/4 of an inch thick. So the number 6 being a 3/8 inch wide plane or a 60 degree segment really settles nicely into that 3/4 inch thick board. If you're making, say, a classical molding with an ovalo. An ovalo is a concave and a convex shape, and a little S curve. Well, each of those shapes is about 3/8 of an inch wide to create that across that 3/8 inch or 3/4 inch thick board. You can change the look and feel of it by changing kind of the slope of that, but you can create so many profiles with just a pair of 6s. But what you could do is just get a number 6 hollow a number 6 round to create the concave shape, to create the coves. Because the beads, the roundovers, you can actually create those with a rabbit plane or a block plane. You might end up with a slightly faceted surface, but nothing that a card scraper won't kind of clean up relatively quickly for you, or a bit of sandpaper on a block or something like that. The round plane will kind of get you into what it takes to start cutting coves, and you can create cavettos and all kinds of different profiles with just that round plane. You are going to need a rabbet plane, or you're going to need to be prepared to make those rabbets on your table saw. So if you're good with that, with the table saw, you're good to go. But recognize, if you want to do it by hand, you do need a rabbet plane. And actually the rabbet plane is more important, because rabbet plane is doing 90% of the work. It's cutting everything, and then the last 4 passes are made with the actual hollow or round plane. So there are solutions in the antique world where maybe you can't find a matched pair. I've found that I can find a lot of hollows and rounds, but I can't find a mate to it. So if you go that route where you're just buying one instead of the matched set, you might open up a few options for you. Moreover, if you go to some of the antique dealers online, the more reputable ones, my favorite is Josh Clark at Hyperkitten, hyperkitten.com, jimbodytools.com. That's another good one. There's quite a few guys out there. They won't often list it on their website because maybe they don't have the match set, but they might have a single number 6. It's worth sending an email to any of these guys and saying, first of all, check their online store. Don't just send them an email. Make sure you check the online store first. But then send them an email and say, look, I'm really just looking for, if you have a match set, great. If not, a single number 6 round. You might be surprised how you would come through. The other solution I would say is look at the large, certainly seek out your local patina auction or your Midwestern Tool Collector. He says he's in Oklahoma. So the Midwestern Tool Collectors Association, reach out to those organizations themselves and say, who, do you know any other dealers? Because those big shows, like the Brown Tool Show and Auction, the Patina Show and Auction, there are hundreds of vendors that show up to these things. And it might just be worthwhile getting a list of a couple of these guys and reaching out via email rather than going to the antique stores. If you've exhausted the antique stores, these planes are out there. They're out there by the boatload. It's just a matter of finding the right person to talk to. The other solution, and this could be a little bit frustrating with the whole supply chain thing right now, but there are cheaper makers of like Taiwanese hollows and rounds, Chinese made hollows and rounds. I know Lee Valley has carried a set of hollows and round planes that are actually set up to cut on the Polestro, and they label that as Japanese hollows and rounds. I personally have not used them. I know no fewer than like 20 woodworkers in the hand tool school who've bought them and reported back, and they work just fine. Are they going to be as great as a Matt Bickford or something like that? No, obviously not. I mean, you get what you pay for. But to get started, I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's like typical something you would find in Lee Valley. It's not like, you know, super, super expensive. You know, not Veritas. We're talking Lee Valley here. The difference in the brand. You know, I want to say it was like $30 for like a pair of these. Then you're out $30. You just might have trouble right now with Lee Valley when it comes to having stuff in stock. But Woodcraft, you might get lucky. If you look up like Taiwanese hollows and rounds, you might actually be able to find something. And that way you can at least get started without a massive outlay of cash, and you can figure out kind of what's important. But honestly, I think looking up the organizers behind the Brown Tool Shows, the organizers behind the Patina Shows, the Midwest Tool Collectors Association, those guys, they've got a dealer list. I guarantee you, they can put you in touch with somebody who could probably help you out.
Cool.
That is all.
That is, I am done. That's good. That's a lot.
that was a lot. that was a lot.
All right, Matt, give us a lot.
No, I'm good. I'm going to give you a quick, I'm going to pull a Mark and do a similar.
Ooh.
A brief answer, maybe. We'll see.
But I'm going to waste 2 minutes talking about it first.
Yeah, they're going to muscle for 30 seconds and then
talk. Hey. We're claiming my time.
I might have said a lot, but it was condensed. It was quick.
It was words.
It was actually dense. Okay, fine. It was words. I will give you that.
Full of nutritional
goodness. It was a string of words.
Indeed.
Spoken. Yes. All right. This is from Philip. Philip says, I am making a mid-century modern-ish style sideboard out of cherry. The sides are 15 degrees off 90. The top is longer than the bottom. The cherry I have has some really interesting grain that I like to wrap around. Therefore, a nice mitered edge is what I'd like to have. The issue I'm having is figuring out the best way to connect the top and bottom. The boards are going to be 3/4 inch thick and 16 inches wide. My initial thought was to do a hidden mitered dovetail, but I'm wondering if there's a better option that'll be as strong. I mean, that's a pretty good option. If you want to do the full blind mitered dovetail, you can go for it. The nice thing about that joint is it doesn't matter how nicely you cut it, as long as it's, you know, somewhat tight. It doesn't matter what the inside really looks like, because you're never going to see it ever. That's the beautiful thing about that style of joinery. If you don't want to go to that extreme, any kind of like loose joinery is a good fit here. So, you know, dowels, something like maybe like the beadlock. If you have a domino, that would be a very similar thing. You can also do like a floating tenon with a router, which might be kind of interesting on a thinner piece. You probably have to pad out your workpiece a little bit to make it a little thicker to give your router some more surface area to rest on, but some kind of floating tendon type thing, or you can go full crazy and do your mitered blind dovetails. Whatever you want to do. I mean, the best joint is whatever you want to do. You know, as
pocket
always.
Pocket screws.
I mean, yeah, technically you can do pocket screws. Yeah, you could.
Why not?
Honestly, I think I would just cut the miter. I mean, he's making a sideboard. So first of all, he's completing the loop, right? He's connecting the polygon. So it's going to be a heck of a lot stronger just because the four corners are connected. But the sideboard probably is going to have internal dividers and stuff, right? I mean, the sideboard's not just one big open box. There's probably shelves, which might make vertical dividers. Maybe, I mean, if there's an interior structure there that's going to tie it and lock it together even more, why bother with the loose tenon stuff? Other than maybe it might make it easier to clamp it up. But just cut the miters.
Sometimes those miters are a damn nightmare without some kind of indexing.
Yeah, I would say yes.
Yeah,
personally.
Packing tape.
Oh,
packing tape does work. Sort of. At least on little boxes.
That was it. Not on a 16-inch white
full
panel.
Cases? Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. All right. Well, that I think that does it for us. Remember that we are proudly sponsored by Rockler. Family-owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high-quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com for a store near you or use the code WOODTALK online to receive free shipping on most orders over $39. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win that Dust Right wall mount dust collector.
Oh, yeah, baby.
And just remember, folks, for those of you who've been with us a very long time, the code is WOODTALK, not WOODTALK online.
That's right. Thank you for clarifying. Good point.
That's what I thought you said. And yeah, and I've been with the show for a long time. I remember when it was WoodTalk Online.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so good questions this week, folks. Thanks for sending in those questions. Keep doing that. Go to woodtalkshow.com and fill out the form or write an email and send it to woodtalkshow@gmail.com or look us up at woodtalkshow on Instagram and you can submit your questions there. Margaret pulls them all together and then sends us an email with those questions. So you could just send us an email.
Email us, but you have Margaret do it for you.
But you can talk to Margaret because she's nice and she likes to do it. So speaking of Margaret, she pulled together some reviews from iTunes.
No, yeah.
That happens still. Did you know iTunes was still there?
Is it even called iTunes anymore, though? I don't think it is.
I think it's just called podcast now.
Apple Music, Apple Podcasts.
Depends on where you're accessing it.
Apple.
It's all dumb. Anyway, great reviews, though. So, Seawood Custom says, best woodworking podcast out there. Can't even explain how much Mark Spagnuolo, as well as Shannon and Matt, made me understand that much about woodworking, either their own personal websites and this podcast. You guys are the best. Keep going as long as you guys enjoy this. I'm a Canadian PTSD veteran. Mark, Shannon, and Matt, you guys probably saved my life. Awesome work. Wow.
Wow. Okay, then.
Don't you guys get big heads over this?
Good Lord.
That was nice. Thank you for that. Nothing to say to that. Review. That's great.
This is Jeerly? Jeerly 7?
Sure.
Sure? Okay. 6 out of 5 stars. Bonus points. All right. They wouldn't allow me to add the extra star. Listen to all the episodes. It takes a ridiculous amount of time to get through all of them. Thanks for filling our ear holes with that sweet woodworking knowledge.
This is just fun just because we get to have Matt read more names.
Yeah.
Great. This is from it's from Binky65. It says, it makes me giggle. As typical, I search the negative reviews first just to see the trolls, but it makes me giggle when somebody says they listen just for information. I've been re-listening to all the episodes just for the humor. Guess I like the locker room mentality. As a side effect, I learn a thing or two. Keep it up. See, I mean, that's our listener base right there.
How much info is really in this? Come on.
Right? Just enough.
Good stuff. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. And we will catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Love you.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.